Welcome to this edition of When the Biomass Hits the Wind Turbine, a discussion of sustainable living and what that means to you and me. I'm Jay Warmke.
I'm Annie Warmke.
And we're both here today talking about being an active bystander, or 90% of success is just showing up. So, Annie.
Isn't that the truth?
I know. Well, I don't even know what an active bystander is. What do you mean by an active bystander?
Well, I think you're going to find out today, and I hope you behave yourself, because you are definitely a person who finds it difficult to be an active bystander. You're the one who says, wait a minute, let's see if the car's going to blow up first before you race over there to rescue the guy.
Okay. Yeah, I would say that's a safe bystander.
Okay.
All right. So we'll find out the difference between being a coward and being an active bystander.
Okay, good idea. But here, we're making fun, but just right. I want to say that I feel like this is an important topic, and I'm really glad we have a guest to help us with this today, because I feel like we're at a time in our culture where we have to learn how to actively help each other, and I think we also have to figure out how to honor that part of ourselves that feels dissent and wants to change things. And I think this is maybe the beginning of talking about that a little more. So.
Okay, but you haven't gotten into my question of what is it? What is an active bystander?
Okay, well, we're
from your perspective. I don't want the expert's perspective yet. I want to know an uninformed perspective, and then you are going to be proven probably wrong.
Okay, so I'll give an illustration of what I think an active bystander is. One time, so I used to organize lots of battered women's projects back in the early days of battered women's projects. And I was in a hotel with a group of my board members from the Women's Fund that I had started. And I noticed this woman kind of being pulled by this guy. And they were up on a balcony. So I surveyed to see, did he have a weapon? What exactly was going on? And I started walking up the steps to him. And I said to the woman in a really clear, bold voice, are you okay? And it stopped everything for a second, and just enough for him to kind of back up a step. And then I saw he's not going to attack me. So I came up to her and I put my arm on her arm and I said, how can I help you? Are you okay? And she said, I'm okay. And she was crying by then. And then he's ordering me to back up, and and then it went from there where I came down and got the hotel person to call the security guard, who did have no clue of what to do. So I had to keep doing the intervention. But the woman eventually left with me. And so I think that's what active bystander is. And I've always been a woman ahead of my time.
Oh, so. Okay. Well, that I won't dispute that. But at this point then, let me introduce Mara Giglio. Giglio?
Yes.
I got that one right.
Oh, man.
I'm not so good with the names.
He's on his game today.
Or I should say Mara Giglio.
Yes.
So, Mara, introduce yourself and tell us what you're all about.
So, I have been the director of the Appalachian Peace and Justice Network for 19 years, where I get to teach bullying and violence prevention. Basically, we teach social-emotional skills to prevent bullying and violence. So the more empathy you have, the less you want to be in conflict with people. So if I, if there is a silver bullet to this work, it is empathy, because empathy changes the game in terms of we care about each other and we don't want to be in conflict, so we're going to work to get out of this conflict. If you don't have empathy, then you have sociopathy. Sociopaths?
Then you're a politician.
You're a politician.
If you don't have empathy, you're a politician.
Yes.
So
we try to
essentially, when you're saying empathy, you're meaning putting yourself in the position of the other person, how your behavior is going to affect them.
Right. Caring about somebody else's feelings.
Mm-hmm. So one of the reasons why this applies so much to sustainability is that we live in a culture that seems to be actively teaching not to be empathetic, to not develop this, or to do away with it. That's why I think this topic is super powerful.
Absolutely. I just ran into somebody who's building empathy for the environment by taking kids out and doing trash pickups, right? So he's teaching those kids to care about the environment through that activity, and hopefully that's going to lead to better stewardship of the environment.
Yeah. When we were kids, which is, before there was dirt, there used to be a commercial on television, and it was quite moving.
You better not be making fun of the Indian with the tear.
I am. And so this guy, clearly a Native American person, and he sees this trash that's thrown into this beautiful, in Appalachia we'd say creek, and it's flowing down. And when they come back to him, he's got a tear. And I know kids, we all were like demanding if there was trash, we had to stop the car and get out and pick it up.
Wow.
Because we had empathy. We didn't want anybody to be sad that somebody threw trash out. And that wasn't just me. I think that, you know, it seemed to be pretty broad-based.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So, but we don't have that empathy going for us today. So where do we go from here to build that?
So I work pre-K up through adult. And the biggest thing to build empathy is to understand feelings. So we play games like feeling charades. We play if you're angry and you know it, and then the kids give me a verse. If you're angry and you know it, go for a walk. If you're angry and you know it, go for a walk. So singing and games gets kids involved. Talking about feelings, pair and share, pair kids up, and they turn and talk to each other about how they're feeling, and they take turns. You can have them reflect back how the other person's feeling to make sure that they got it right. And then there's also nonviolent communication in terms of resolving conflict, which is based
on
empathy and sharing your perspective, and then also making a request for a change.
Are you feeling like your task is getting easier or harder? Because it seems like the current generation of kids coming up seem to be a little more in touch with pretty much everything than we were.
Mm.
But also the media that they're being exposed to is the opposite.
Absolutely.
And so they've got this kind of disconnect between what they know to be true and what they see as reflected as true.
Mm-hmm.
And how are you running into that?
So you're making me think about impulse control and how important impulse control is to success in life. If kids have better impulse control, they have healthier relationships, they are healthier themselves, and they are more successful in life. So we teach impulse control through things like the marshmallow challenge, where every kid gets one marshmallow. If they can wait, depending developmentally, if they can wait 20 to 30 minutes for a second marshmallow, then they will get two. But if they, you know, if they can't wait, then they just get that one. So it's a physical, tactile game that says if you wait, you will get rewarded. And then they get to practice how to wait, right? We always just tell kids, oh, just wait.
Mm-hmm.
But our curriculum teaches kids how to wait, how to distract themselves, how to look around at something else, how to get involved in something else. Don't smell the marshmallow. Don't look at the marshmallow.
Yeah.
Think about something.
Don't think about that marshmallow.
Put your mind somewhere else. It's going to be a lot
Jay,
easier.
This would work for you really well. I can think of several situations.
I minored in don't thinking about the marshmallow.
Well, one thing that keeps crossing my mind about this conversation is kids that I worked with where we live, junior high kids. And honestly, I don't see how that, again, this is where I live. The teachers need to go to a graduate school to learn this for themselves and their own impulse control, their own behavior, their own inappropriateness. And then what happens when these kids go home, it's unbelievable what they face. And again, this is where I live that I have this experience. But so if I have teachers that aren't sophisticated enough with their own emotions to know how to deal with these things. And then I have adults in the rest of my life, mm-hmm. ministers, scout leaders, parents, grandparents. Yep. You know, how does this lesson really perpetuate itself so that it actually makes a difference?
Absolutely. Well, I love teaching this stuff because I learn it, right? So I have to reinforce this stuff in myself, and it's so helpful. Of course, I'm an adult, but it's still helpful to, repeat these lessons myself, to learn this stuff. We do trainings for teachers. Whenever we're training students, the teachers are always in the room also getting trained. It's best to train the teachers because then the teachers train the students. But sometimes schools say, well, the teachers aren't going to teach this, so they pull me in and then I teach it. And then the teachers there watching me teach and hopefully picking up some things as well.
Well, it sounds like what you've been talking so far about dealing with your own behavior But the term active bystander to me sounds more like mm-hmm. something's going on.
Yeah.
I am going to be exposed to some event and I need to be prepared in yes. how I'm going to deal with that.
Yeah.
Like the example Annie was giving about the person perhaps in a domestic violence situation. Mm-hmm. Maybe there's an accident. Maybe there's just somebody yelling at someone yeah. else like you see on television all the time. So what would you recommend as far as getting yourself ready for this society we live in?
That's a great question. So just briefly, bystander means witness. It's somebody that witnesses abuse or injustice. We also have the word upstander. So instead of being a bystander, you can be an upstander. You can do something about it. And we also have the term active bystander. So you can be a passive bystander and you can be an active bystander. And the biggest thing that I teach myself and others is to trust our gut. Not only using our intuition is important, but if we just use intuition, then we're not using critical thinking skills. Mm-hmm. So we want to use intuition plus critical thinking skills. We want to weigh the pros and the cons. Is this safe for me to intervene?
See,
do I need help?
I like that because this is the difference between Annie and I. I have critical thinking before taking part in something that's
going
on.
I trust my gut,
and
Mara.
Why you guys are such a great partnership.
She rushes
together.
In. She rushes in, and I usually grab the back of her shirt as she's rushing.
That only happened once, Mara, when a guy was beating up a woman in a hotel room and woke me up in the middle of the night, and I started pounding on the door, and suddenly I wasn't making contact anymore. And Jay's like picked me up and brought me back to the room and said, "What are you thinking?"
Okay, so a lot of us are.
So
in
you
these...
need both of you.
Yeah,
both
yeah.
of your skills.
But that's true in life. We all need each other.
So, but mm-hmm. we all run into these situations where we say, "Okay, I saw that, and oh man, I should have done this."
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's always easy to Monday morning quarterback, and you're sitting there afterwards going. I didn't say anything because I didn't want to draw attention to myself.
Yep.
See? All right, I'm good at that.
And
I learned
it. I'm going to kick your... I'm not allowed to say that word on the radio.
Okay, so how are you... what I'm taking from this is that you're saying, all right, you're going to be faced with these situations. So let's give you some... Mm-hmm. So you're not 6 hours later sitting in your room going, I should have done this. You're saying, okay, this is a situation I'm prepared for. This is what I'm going to do.
Absolutely.
So now when you teach this to kindergartners or one thing, that's one thing. But how about it's somebody who's fully relatively developed, you know,
their
an
frontal lobe is working
in a manner of speaking. Yeah. You know, so what skills would you recommend there?
For adults?
Yeah, well, or people who are old enough to be adults.
Well, I've been teaching in 9th and 10th grade advisories at Federal Hocking. So my lesson is geared toward them, but I also think that it's a good lesson for adults. It makes sense to me. We've got 3 intervention strategies. Directly intervene if you feel safe. Delegate to somebody else if you don't feel safe. And distract. Or put the attention on something else and get out of there and deal with it that way. So there's 3 different ways to intervene. The biggest thing, again, is trusting your gut and your critical thinking skills and thinking about safety. Is it safe to intervene? Do I need help? Do I need an authority figure? Covering all your bases.
Okay. Well, in a minute, I want to ask you a little bit more about the situations that we're coming into that aren't life-threatening, the more realistic day-to-day type mm-hmm. things that we run into. But let's pause for just a second, and let me remind you that you are listening to When the Biomass Hits the Wind Turbine with Jay and Annie Warmke, reminding you that it is indeed the end of the world as we know it.
And thank God.
Thank God, yeah. Okay, well, if it is the end of the world as we know it, I am an active bystander. What am I going to do? what I was going to say is there are situations, I found it very common when I was in business, where somebody says something that's very inappropriate.
You're still in business.
No, okay. I won't even go there. But so people will say something that you know is inappropriate, mm-hmm. is wrong,
is racist, sexist,
doesn't matter.
Bullying.
Any
homophobic.
And the typical response is for people to be embarrassed slightly, don't say anything, mm-hmm. and then move on.
Yeah.
There have been situations in my life where someone did say something and it made a big impact on me.
Oh, great.
And I was saying, why wasn't I courageous enough to
say
that?
What did they do?
Oh, well, this was a situation. I was actually in a board meeting, one of those, where somebody made an inappropriate joke. He thought it was a joke about Martin Luther King Jr. and the holiday and said he was going to celebrate it by flushing his toilet twice. And everybody just sat there.
Oh, no.
And then one guy, it was in the South. We were in the South. And this one guy, in a real deep Southern voice, he goes, well, now, Bob, I met Dr. King. I think Dr. King was one of the greatest Americans this country has ever produced, and you have offended the hell out of me. And I was like, whoa, that was amazing.
Yeah.
You know? And that had a big impact.
Yeah.
And of course, but I thought I would never have said that. So,
but I do think that it requires thinking. I know I was sitting in a government meeting where somebody used the N-word, and it's all men, and I'm the only woman. Mm-hmm. And I know I'm going to say something, but then I got to think, how will I say it so they can hear me?
Right.
It's not enough to just say something. Mm-hmm. I feel like it's evil, and it kind of gets in you, and so you can't let it. But I did say, you know, I think what you're describing is a person who is inappropriate. I think you're describing a person who isn't nice, who's nasty. But you're definitely not describing somebody's color as that personality. Mm-hmm. And all the men look up like, oh, my word. And then they all just go on like I didn't say anything. But at least I was true to myself. And I think that's a lot of what this is about, is to say, this isn't me accepting the status quo. And I don't have to be disrespectful or snotty unless there's danger involved. But what I have to do is thought about it ahead of time. What am I going to do to respond so I can at least feel like I was honoring of myself? I think that's really valuable.
Yeah, absolutely. And when I work in high schools, I talk about impediments to action and assets. So things that keep us from acting and assets are things that help us act. So when I was in the Athens Middle School, the boys were starting a fight. They had circled up and they were ready to kick some butt. And so I used my female privilege, I think, and I got in the middle because
females have privilege. Mara?
I did. I did not get hit, and
okay.
I think it's because I'm a girl. So
okay.
I think I used my female privilege to break up that fight. But I don't know if I could have done that if I was a boy. I think it could have been harder, and maybe I would have been more a target for violence. So we have to use our assets for the greater good and figure out what they are. And if we don't have enough assets, how can we get more on board so that we can make this intervention successful?
Well, and I do think, as I just said, it is thinking about it ahead of time.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, having some pat answers or thinking certain things that happen. I don't have to respond to everything, but I have to speak up if it feels like it's touched me in you know, a negative way, because otherwise it's in there mulling around. We got to get it back out.
Well, and one of the things, Annie, that you've taught me over the years, because my inclination has always been, you know, look, this person is not going to be changed if I try and change their mind. They're already a jerk, and they're going to remain a jerk regardless of what I say. So I can dissuade myself from getting involved at that point. But you will always say, but then it's part of you. You know, you got to kind of spit that out because you don't want to take their jerkness and own it. But how do you overcome, because we hear a lot of this where you're being overly sensitive. You know, you're being a snowflake. You're creating these.
Wait, what's it mean to be a snowflake?
That
sounds
know.
Like such
it's,
baloney.
It's a term that people use. It's like the poisoning the well in any kind of
dismissing.
Argument. It's saying, if you complain about what I do, you're being overly sensitive. You're a snowflake. I can call you a name.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't even matter. I think snowflake's kind of nice. Call me a snowflake all day long.
Everyone's different.
Every's individual.
That's kind of right. Beautiful. Yeah, I like that.
All right. So we're all snowflakes here talking about how. But these are ways people try and essentially dismiss you You know, it's the bully saying you can't fight back because and you'll give whatever reason. So what tools are you going to give me to get over being called a snowflake?
Well, I've been studying nonviolent communication, and they always say tell them how what they're doing is making you feel. So non-judgmentally, when you use the N-word, it makes my skin crawl. And if you do it again, I'm going to leave this meeting, or I'm going to talk to an authority figure, X, Y, Z, right?
Or if the authority figure was already sitting there, it's like, okay.
What if the authority figure is the one doing it?
Yeah, exactly. That's and that really makes tough. It much harder to intervene, right? Yeah. If this person has power over you, then you've got to deal with that power dynamic.
Yeah.
Do you want to stay in that power dynamic, or do you need to shift that? Can you get more power? Can you band together with other people and gain more power with the authority figure? So,
Can't these techniques also, though, then be used as a bullying method? You know, I mean, I just recall dealing with people who were so politically correct that any statement you ever said had to be completely rephrased because calling somebody, you know, a woman was being bad, calling somebody a boy was being bad, calling somebody a truck driver was being bad. You know, they all have their pet little terms. And so isn't that also a weapon? Is that just another form of bullying?
I think you can use anything. The other day, somebody decided that it was my turn to do perspective taking. They're like, now you need to take my perspective. And I was like, what? I hear your perspective, but I'm not going to take it. Like, I'm fine with my perspective. I trust myself. I'm self-referencing. And that was a man, you know, it was kind of mansplaining me, but you just have to stay firm. Nonviolent communication has taught me that there's a difference between requests and demands, right? You can demand something that feels forceful, that doesn't feel voluntary. But if you make a request, you know, say to my friend, I make a request that he not use the B word because I feel like that's really sexist and rude. And if he doesn't stop, then maybe I'm not going to be his friend anymore.
Yeah. Well, one thing that I feel pretty strongly about is the idea that, I'm kind of spoiled because the home that I live in and the people around me are really respectful of my own space. So, you know, I can put my arms out from as far as I can stretch them, and I can say, that's my space, and I know I'm respected. And I think one of the challenges is to be in a place where that is not happening, where you're being shoved or touched inappropriately in a crowd or whatever, and or just the emotional part of that invasion. And I think for myself, I know lots of times I've just put my hand up like, stop, and people don't speak to me that way.
Yes.
No, it's not acceptable to me. And I don't even threaten. If they don't stop, I just walk away because I have that choice, that freedom, because that's my space. It belongs to me.
That's right.
And I think kids really benefit from understanding that they own some space around them. I think kids in our culture are so disrespected in so many ways that has power for them to realize that something belongs to them. And that's why it feels bad when somebody is in your space doing stuff you don't like or want to have happen.
Okay, but we keep coming back to how we will deal with ourselves in this. And this whole discussion was about being an active bystander where somebody else is doing something. And then how are you going to respond to that? And I think we've touched on if there is a violent situation, you've got to identify, am I at risk? Is somebody else at risk if I do intervene? Do I make the situation worse or do I make it better? I think that's something
that's a real challenge. That's a big, big challenge.
Yeah, I mean, you talk about
that's a call that sometimes you make and
I've done that
in stores where people were abusing kids, and I'm thinking, is it worse to intervene and ask, can I help you? It seems like you're having a bad day, or I don't do anything. It's horrible to have to be in that position.
And then we step it down a notch and say, all right, somebody, it's not physical violence we're worried about at the moment. It's inappropriateness as we have determined it to be inappropriate. We've talked about sexism, racism, otherisms, then I guess we can broaden it out. What if somebody throws a a paper cup on the ground, you know?
Exactly.
I mean, that's offensive.
You're a bystander to that injustice.
I mean, I always question about that. You see somebody drop something, I mean, do you do the, oh, sir, you know, I'm sure you're not aware, but you dropped this. Must be yours.
I got one. I just say, does your mama know you act like
well,
that?
Well, now you're attacking. I mean,
not an attack.
No, but it always feels
a little more direct than that.
Yeah. No, she would do a New York, yo, hey, buddy.
Hey, darling.
You know, you're nobody.
That's why you're such
your
a good
maid.
Team.
Right. No.
You got it all.
Uh-huh. No, then he says, Annie, it's me they're going to beat up when you do this stuff. Uh-huh. So you could, like, get between us or something.
Yes.
Yeah. So that's another thing where, and it can be chronic, you know, how would you deal with an inappropriate neighbor, keeps a junky yard, makes loud noises. That's always because you've got there are repercussions for this
mm-hmm.
behavior. You
Absolutely.
Know, you're going to get some blowback if you complain. Mm-hmm. You know, so again, what's your recommendation? You're the expert. Tell me how to deal with my obnoxious neighbor.
Well, you have to weigh the pros and the cons, right? You got to do that critical thinking skills of what's good if I intervene, what is bad about me intervening, what's mm-hmm. how's this going to affect my relationship, who's got the power.
It's a strategy. You know, we right. had this happen in our neighborhood around an animal that was being abused, and the neighbor said to me, Annie, you should call the animal control. And I was like, oh, you want war. You really want war. Let's think on this for a bit. Yeah. And eventually what happened was amazing because there came an opportunity to speak with this person and offer some assistance.
Oh,
and she actually came for tea. We invited come for tea and let's talk about it.
Good. See?
And
That's
she
great.
Did come, and we were able to work it through of what to do and how we might be helpful to her. And she's become actually the nicest neighbor we've ever had. But
nice.
We could have been at war.
Nice.
And so I don't really want to be at war with people.
No.
It's not the strategy for my life.
Okay. Well, Mara, we've got about 1 minute left. Time flies. So how are you going to how would you sum this up? What are some things people can do?
There's a lot that people can do. I would get trained. I love training. I think trainings are great because we can work on this together. We can bring up situations. Well, what could I do here? And then we can all help you brainstorm possible ideas. Also, the big thing is to increase your positive bank account. Annie's example just was like, well, if we do this in a sweeter way, then we might get more rewards, right? So the more we do those nice little things for our relationships, we build up our positive bank account, then when we have conflict, we're more resilient to it. So you handled that in such a beautiful way where you invited her over for tea in this kind way and asked for some changes, but you did it with that container, that positive container. So I think that's why that was successful. And I think that's why it's important to pay attention to building up our positive bank accounts with each other as much as we can.
And it also takes a certain amount of courage and boldness. And I think that's what we have to develop
yes.
in each other and why we need each other to help
yes.
us for
okay,
that.
Okay, so,
yes.
so be bold. Well,
be bold. Be courageous.
Bold. Uh-huh. Well, you have been listening to When the Biomass Hits the Wind Turbine with Jay and Annie Warmke and Mara. Thank you, Mara.
Thank you.
Thank you for spending just a little bit of time with us. And as your grandmother probably told you, the secret to a happy and sustainable life is...
Hey, really, for sure, play nice with others. And don't forget that. And clean up your own mess. And Jay Warmke, please start eating more of those veggies.
And if you don't, somebody is going to say something.
That's right.
Till next time.
Mother Earth will sing and her children will be
You can find more information on living sustainably in our unsustainable world at BlueRockStation.com.